Shut up and sit down.
You're listening to the Cheaters Never Pin podcast, a proud part of the Section 328 family. Follow us on Twitter at CheatersNVRPin. Now, live from ringside, it's Mr. Workrate and JC. Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Cheaters Never Pin podcast. It's a very snowy evening here in the Triangle. I'm JC, here next to me at the commentary booth, my good friend, my good pal, Mr. Workrate, Tom.
It's amazing how much we don't appreciate power until we don't have it.
Yeah, man. I lost power for, it's pretty close to 5 hours yesterday, which is why this is getting to you a day late, so I apologize, and Duke Energy apologizes. But yeah, having to sit in my car to charge my devices and watch Netflix was a bit taxing.
That's what you have to do sometimes, I guess.
Just making sacrifices, drinking beer in my car.
On the rare occasions that we actually get snow, it's kind of a special occasion, so...
Yeah, you know...
We're not prepared for such things.
No.
I've been out of work for 2 days, so...
Well, I see. I worked for 20 minutes or 30 minutes on Wednesday. So that happened. But anyway, we're not here to talk about snow. We're here to talk about wrestling. We're going to talk about...
We can talk about Al Snow.
Yeah. What does everybody want? Al Snow.
Not Al Snow.
Yeah, that's true. So we're going to talk this week about the 25th anniversary of Monday Night Raw that's coming up this in like 4 days.
I'm psyched for that. I am too.
I was really sad we had to go through another episode of Raw before we got to that.
It's very anticlimactic. It's just like, okay, just, you know, fast forward through that. Get right. Us to the meat there. Yep. I mean, we've got a double feature coming up because we've got Raw 25 this coming Monday, and then, you know, 6 days later, we have the Royal Rumble, like, possibly my favorite of all the big pay-per-views.
Be a fun one. We'll talk about the Rumble a little bit tonight. Not too much, because we get that episode next week.
Gotta say some hashtag content.
Yes. We'll talk about the new signees that entered the Performance Center this week. And what our hopes for them are. And then whatever else crosses our mind. Very free form edition of the Cheaters Never Pin podcast tonight.
Keeping it light.
Yeah.
Because you never know when power's going to go out again.
Hopefully not tonight. Since things are melting away, I hope.
Yeah. Well, they're freezing back up now.
That's true. That's a very good point. So where do we want to start? We want to start with Raw 25?
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah. So 25 years of Monday Night Raw, Tom. Raw has existed almost my entire lifetime, all but 4 years.
Oh, God.
Almost five.
Oh, God.
You knew I had to say that, right?
We got the Thomas Old.
There you go. We got it out of the way early.
Reference out early.
Yes. I appreciated, too, the people chirping me on Twitter Monday night or Tuesday night. While watching the Raw 25 special, I was like, I remember, you know, whatever segment this was or when I was a kid, they were like, shut up. It's like, well, you know what, that's my viewpoint. Anyway, so Tom, what's your first memory of Monday Night Raw?
I'm not going to be completely old, but I remember primetime wrestling. I go back pretty far. I go back to the 80s with my WWF fandom. So I can remember, hell, I remember when we first got cable. And back in the days, you know, when you only had like 12 channels, and then cable progressively kind of spread out to the country. And I didn't necessarily live in a major metropolitan area, so I didn't get it when other people had it. But but we got it. We got the USA Network, and I was into wrestling. I watched like the syndicated shows, but when you got cable, you got the USA Network, and that got you primetime wrestling on Mondays, which was one of their major shows. There's that in like the Tuesday Night Titans, which was crap, but just Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan going over all the angles and, you know, just 2 hours worth of highlights and condensed, you know, wrap-ups of all the angles and interviews and actual halfway decent matches, because the syndicated shows had complete crap. It was all squash jobs. Where primetime wrestling actually had, like, a halfway decent match here and there, so that was kind of cool. But I can remember when it was kind of getting phased out, and, oh, we got this new program that's coming. It's WWF Raw. And I remember seeing stuff about them doing, because, again, I lived in that area. I didn't live in Manhattan, but I lived, you know, Western Long Island at the time. And they were talking about, we're doing this live taping of this live show, it's at the Manhattan Center, you know, come on down. And it's just like, oh, it's kind of cool. And, you know, so I remember when that show first came out, and its format, the way it is now compared to when it was then, is a completely different animal. I don't know, since you're like, what, 10 years old, if you remember the concept of Shotgun Saturday Night, when WWF tried to put that out in the late 90s during the Attitude Era. But that kind of reminds me of what Raw almost wanted to be, not as extreme or, you know, like, you know, just kind of hardcore like that. But they wanted it to be a little bit edgier, and again, because it was live, and they made an effort. I remember watching their early shows, just making you realize that, crap, this is live. Like, I'm going to talk about whatever's going on today in the paper as we're doing, you know, like, as Razor Ramon's in the ring. By the way, it appears that the Queen of England did this today because we're live. You know, it's weird. But it was cool. Nobody was doing anything like that.
No. I can't quite recall what the first episode I ever saw was, because after this many years, it has all blended together into one giant chunk. But, like, I guess for me, the first major, like, story event I remember is them trying to sacrifice Stephanie, the corporate ministry, or I guess it was just the ministry at the time. That's like the first.
Yes.
That's the first thing I have a memory of.
They're gonna put her on that symbol.
Yeah.
Raise her up on that symbol.
Right in the middle, like that, leading to showing that it was the corporate ministry and all of that.
It's not a cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was Stephanie's debut.
Yeah.
Because she got kidnapped because she was not a character at the time. It was just Vince existed, and the ministry was against, you know, everything pretty much. So they went and decided to capture someone close to Vince in Stephanie, who was, again, not a character at the time. It was just one of those behind the scenes, quote unquote, shoot aspects of wrestling that they were doing. So they grabbed Stephanie McMahon and they put her on the, not a cross, it's a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, because if they would have put her on a cross, then Kurt Angle would have never showed up. He was way against nailing people to a cross.
Yeah.
As we believe.
And they would later crucify Stone Cold on,
yes,
the symbol.
Yep.
Which actually is in the top 100 Raw moments. But Stephanie ended up getting saved from being, I don't know, whatever sacrifice they were going to do on her.
Yeah.
And that's what led to Stephanie becoming an on-screen character, because she was saved by the group of wrestlers, one of them being Tess,
mm-hmm,
which led to the test Stephanie quote unquote romance, which then led to the wedding, which was also
followed
a
by the Triple H
moment.
Date rape.
Followed by the roofie and date rape.
So I have a legit question about that storyline that I don't know that I've ever figured out.
Okay.
At the time she was roofied, God, only in wrestling can you have this discussion. At the time she was roofied,
yeah.
Was she on Triple H's side already?
No.
Okay. So it was like it was like Stockholm syndrome then over time, right? Like she progressively like fell in love with him before she turned on Vince.
Yeah, that seemed to be the whole thing because like she got roofied and kind of kidnapped by Triple H, thrown into the car. They were in Vegas.
The Little White Chapel.
The Little White Chapel. Triple H does his best ventriloquism to, like, replicate Stephanie's voice as she's completely passed out in the passenger side. They get married. Now, of course, they show this, like, at the most inopportune time of Test and Stephanie's wedding.
Right. Well, because Vince had said if anyone from DX shows up at the wedding, they're fired.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
I'm sure.
He spent a lot of money. He took a full page ad out in USA Today to invite everyone to watch the wedding live on the USA Network.
Yes. So the footage is played and Stephanie starts crying hysterically and Andrew.
She always called him Andrew.
Yes. Because we're breaking kayfabe here. It's not Test. It's Andrew.
This isn't an angle.
And, she starts crying, and Vince is pissed, and Andrew Test is pissed, and,
Triple H is just in his leather backwards paperboy cap.
Yeah. There may have been a jean vest, I'm not sure.
Oh. The jean vest is over the leather jacket, over the Motorhead or DX t-shirt. DX at the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is pre-Motorhead. This is still whatever band played all the DX music.
Right. Oh, man. Only in wrestling can you have a discussion about... Well, no, she didn't fall in love with him until after he roofied her. Jesus.
Yeah.
So, that fell... So, WWE Network, WWE, has a collection up that's the top 100 moments in Raw history.
Yeah.
They've progressively put up 100 through 75, or 100 through 26, and then they did a one-hour special that aired on USA and is now on the network, hosted by Corey Graves and goddamn Peter Rosenberg.
Still wearing the fucking jacket, by the way.
I hate him so much. There's just something about him that grates on every nerve I have. And good for him, he's getting his shot because he's he's a fan who truly cares about WWE. But God, he grates on me so much.
Yeah, I mean he at least like when they first started off before they even went into it, they kind of paid tribute to Bobby Heenan and he showed the fact that he's wearing the jacket because of Bobby Heenan, which I remember when I first saw him debut that jacket at some pay-per-view pre-show, I was like, you fucker, get that off. But yeah. Bobby also wasn't dead at the time, too.
True.
So.
So the top 25 moments, and we're going to go through these and give our opinion on if they should be in the top 25. And then we'll get to what you gave us as your top Raw moments, and we'll give our favorite Raw moment of all time.
Okay.
There we go. See? I structured the bit mid-show. So, number 25 was Bubba Ray Dudley powerbombing Mae Young off the stage.
Which I had to explain to my child, which was fun.
Absolutely deserves a place on the top 25. Don't know if it's top, or in the top 100, because that's shocking. Don't know if it's top 25 material.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely shocking because... I mean, Mae Young, still, I mean, that's not a kayfabe 70-something years old she is.
She was.
She's that old. And, I mean, that was a solid bump, too.
Yeah. But if you watch, like, she was so well protected. That was the most beautiful, protected, brutal-looking powerbomb ever.
Yeah.
Like, Bubba's a champ for that. Also, for them to be like, hey, can you powerbomb a 70-year-old woman? I think Pritchard's told this story on a podcast one time. I feel like, yeah. I remember. But, yeah. I would also not wanted to do that.
I forget what that was. I don't think it was a Dudley's one, but I remember that story because, like, pretty much Mae was, like, Bubba's trying to be protective and trying to think of ways to, and Mae's just like, just do it!
That's amazing.
Come on!
Moment number 24, 1-2-3 Kid defeats Razor Ramon. Absolutely a top 25 moment.
The Kid, he was not yet 1-2-3 Kid.
Good point. He became 1-2-3 Kid out of this.
Yeah, going into it, he had, he had been wrestling as the Lightning Kid for, various independent promotions and, GWF. But when WWF brought him in, they brought him in as, like, each week he was a different kid. Like, he was Lightning Kid one week, and he was, like, I forget, something else kid the next week. But he always seemed to have a different gimmick, and he would lose. And then he was – that's why if you watch the clip, if you go to the WWE Network and you watch that clip number 24, whoever is doing commentary, I don't know if it's Macho Man or whatever, it's just like – you know, what's his name this week?
Yeah.
And he's just like, it's just the Kid this week, so.
My favorite part of that is Waltman's reaction to, like, oh, I won, I'm really happy. Oh, shit, I won, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
It's very fun. Number 23, Eric Bischoff is named the general manager of Monday Night Raw. Absolutely a top 25 moment.
Yeah, great for shock value. I was starting to get out of the product at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, I mean, we're, what, a year and a half? Well, let's see, just by looking at the next moment. We're 15 months removed from the purchase of WCW.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and to understand the hatred that Bischoff and McMahon had for each other. I mean, Bischoff wasn't involved come 2001, I think. He was actually attempting to buy WCW at that point.
Right. And
things just didn't work out, mainly because of television. But just to see him that quickly as a turnaround and as a on-screen character and just, like, them embracing each other like they were best friends is, like, fucking wrestling, man.
Yeah. He summed up all my feelings on that perfectly. Number 22, Shane McMahon buys WCW out from under the old man. I will never forget turning on, like, I think I even tweeted this, like, I was a kid then, so, like, I didn't read dirt sheets. And, like, I had no idea Vince had bought WCW. So we turn on Nitro to watch our, like, normal hour of Nitro before Raw starts. And it starts with Vince. And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
So my mind was blown at that point. And then I turn it over to Raw. And we're figuring out what happens. And then we find out, you know, Shane is in, what trashy beach is it?
Not Daytona.
No. I'd remember Daytona.
Panama City?
Yes, Panama City Beach, Florida. At that hotel. And they, Shane comes out and says, the contract reads McMahon, but it doesn't say Vince. It reads Shane McMahon. And the terrible invasion angle began.
Shortly it could thereafter. Have been so much better.
Yeah. I mean, we can it's do ego. An entire show. We can do an entire show on the invasion.
Yeah.
We won't get into it now, but yeah. I mean, Shane literally in a WCW ring. Crazy.
And it was surreal because you watched it and you could flip back and forth between USA Network
same shit.
And TNT, and it was a simulcast.
Yep.
Yep.
Because once they got to that point, it was live because they were going split screen, and it was just weird. It was a great moment. I don't know. It's lost a little bit on me because of the end result of it, but
fair.
Yeah, it was at that time. It was pretty surreal.
Yeah. Number 21, Mike Tyson arrives in the WWF and is attacked by Stone Cold because goddamn, this is my ring.
Now, let's be fair. Mike Tyson attacked Stone Cold.
He did.
Because
Tyson Stone shoved Cold, first. And yeah. Stone Cold flipped him off.
Yeah.
But,
this was awesome for me, watching it.
Yeah.
When it happened, because it was and at that time, Mike was kind of falling from grace. He had already lost to Buster Douglas. He was facing his rape convictions, which was why he was basically available, because he was banned from boxing for, so I think it was indefinitely at this point.
Right.
Because of the rape allegations. And the arrest, I think he had actually gone to prison and he had just gotten out of prison maybe or something. I don't remember. I'm not a boxing historian by any means. But Mike at this point was still a major fighter. He had lost to Buster, but he was still a marketable boxer.
He was still viewed as the baddest man on the planet.
And the fact that the WWF got him for, I wouldn't put it on the Rousey level. I'd put it on Conor McGregor level at this point, where McGregor, isn't pound for pound the best fighter on the planet completely at this point, but he's up there. But I mean, that's like the air that McGregor has is the air that Tyson had at that time.
Yeah.
That he was by far, even though he wasn't holding a belt or whatever, he was by far the most well-known boxer at a time where there really wasn't any MMA mainstream or anything like that. He was the biggest legitimate fighter on the planet.
Yeah.
And he was in a WWF ring.
Yeah, I kind of got goosebumps there a little bit, just thinking about it again. Where am I? Number 20. From Greensboro, North Carolina, Rock, This Is Your Life.
The highest rated segment in the history of Monday Night Raw.
And deservedly so. I will never, I remember watching this when it happened. And it was just, I think they were supposed to have, 8 minutes, and they end up going damn near 20. And the crowd is just eating out of the palm of their hands. It was just so well done for a non-wrestling segment.
Yeah, Pritchard's talked about this one on the podcast, too, where basically, in hindsight, looking back, he loved it, but when it was actually happening live, it drove him insane because it fucked over their entire schedule. But, you have two people that worked so well off of each other, because you have Mick, who's just this lovable goofball, and can keep a relatively, whatever insult you throw back at him, he's just just rolls off of him. And then you have The Rock, who, is the epitome of charisma and coolness, and just everything that Mick throws at him, The Rock just completely shits on. And it works so well between the two of them. It was lightning in a bottle.
And all the actors they hired to play his coach and his high school sweetheart and all that, just perfect. Well, they did very well. Sometimes those bit parts don't end up very good, and they did here.
You can take that whistle, shine it up real nice, turn it sideways. Anyway.
Yep. Number 19, we already touched on this. The Triple H Test Stephanie wedding that ends up turning into the Triple H Stephanie wedding.
Yeah.
Number 18, the Festival of Friendship.
Excuse me as I shed a tear.
It still hurts. Like, just watch it back then. And it's so stupid.
I watched it again yesterday. With the kids.
I would rank... This absolutely deserves to be higher than the This Is Your Life, though. As far as, like, the impact of the segment and, like, crowd reaction.
It is, because it was shocking to people.
Yeah. Like, you knew it was coming at some point. But, like...
I mean, just the way that, like, Jericho's being goofy and
Over the top goofy.
Yeah, and Owens is just rolling his eyes, attempting to tolerate. It's similar in that aspect to This Is Your Life, where you had the goofy character and the one that's trying to, like, play it straight the entire time.
Yeah. Because you've got the awful statue and Dwayne Gill and the creation painting. Jerk was like, Owens is like, I have kids. I can't hang this in my house. You're not wearing any pants. And then he gives him his own gift. Tear.
But. My name's on this.
And Jericho plays it so well, the way he raises the clipboard with the little, like, the way he swings it out so the camera sees it perfectly.
Yep.
What a consummate professional, Chris Jericho.
Knows where the hard camera is.
Yep. Number 17. Edge retires.
Speaking of tears.
Yeah. This is the sad moment section of the show.
Okay, so we have, I think, in this top 100, we have 4 retirements. That's spitballing off the top of my head.
I haven't seen the rest. I've only seen the top 25. I need to go back and watch the other 75. Jesus.
So there's 4 retirements, and this is, strangely enough, the highest ranked one. Because this is the only one in the 25. Because you have...
Let's say, what other ones were there?
You have this one. You have Daniel Bryan.
Okay.
You have Flair.
Okay.
And I believe you have Shawn Michaels.
This should be number one out of those 4.
Right. Because this was completely unexpected.
Right.
I mean, well, not completely. Yeah.
Brian was too.
Well, but Brian wasn't wrestling for a period of time.
Exactly. We knew he
was
hurt.
Edge wrestled the night before.
Yeah. Nothing. Well, the week before, he headlined Mania.
I thought it was the day before, but okay. All right. So, anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
It was recent. So, I mean, it was just like he just wrestled. It wasn't Daniel Bryan who. Pretty much had been injured and came back a little bit and was out for X period of time. And you're like, and you heard the rumors and everything. Like, he's not going to go back. They're not going to let him come back, that type of thing. With Sean, with Rick, they had both lost matches, which basically were supposed to end their careers. And for one of them, it actually did. Damn it, Rick.
He still got some gas in the tank.
But this was... And the thing is, too, Rick was as old as he was.
Right.
Sean was, I mean...
Old enough.
Sean was decently old enough. Edge had years left. You knew you had... You knew you were supposed to have years left with him.
Yeah. You wanted to see him do the I'm going to wrestle full time and then fade away. Like, you know, go part time. The way Cena's staging himself out now.
Yeah. And it by introducing it, I mean, when he came out, we don't know why he's making an announcement. He's just cutting a promo. You know, that's what wrestlers do. It's when it was Daniel Bryan, you knew it was a retirement announcement.
Well, he'd already...
Because of location and everything like that. It had been announced.
Yeah.
You didn't know with Edge. So he came out and he looked happy and, you know, he kind of did his thing and then
he
starts to speak.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, no.
As soon as he starts it out with the, you're going to have to give me some time here because I don't know if I'm gonna make it through this. It's like, no.
And your stomach drops.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Happier things.
Yeah. Please.
The one I absolutely did not understand why it was on the top 25 list. This is the one I did not get. Undertaker returns to challenge Triple H for WrestleMania 27.
Look to the sign.
I mean, it's
let's both look at the sign.
It's a cool moment because they don't say it. They don't say a thing. But you know what? You know what's happening. And yes, the building was electric because it's the Undertaker's return, and it's Triple H, but
that's
it's not a top 25 moment.
It was the build for Taker, because Taker had been out for a while, and they were building his comeback, and it was just that kind of combination of Taker's back, and then Triple H shows up, and you realize, crap, they're going to fight at WrestleMania, so yeah. I mean, like, I get it. It's a top 100. Yeah, I agree with you. It's not 16. It's not better than Edge's retirement.
No.
Jesus.
It's not better than Mae Young giving birth to a hand, which isn't in the top 25, which is egregious.
Yes. People still talk about it to this day.
The hand was on Raw 1000. He should be at Raw 25.
Yeah.
Number 15, criminally underrated. Vince goes to the hospital.
The birth of Mr. Sacco.
Yes. Yep. If for nothing but that.
Yeah.
And that between the birth of Mr. Sacco and the amazing noise Stone Cold Steve Austin gets off that bedpan when he hits Vince over the head with it. Just the he hit him in just the right place, in just the right part of his skull to get that thud sound.
That cartoon like.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
We got Mr. Sacco. We got the debut of Yurple the Clown.
Yep.
We got Stone Cold shoving a catheter up some orifice of
Vince
McMahon. Yeah, it's peak attitude era.
Yep. It's Vince and Stone Cold stuff. Like, it's rare that's ever a misfire.
Yeah. I mean, just like kind of the cutback, and just like the nurse is like, what do you think, doctor? Well, I'll take it from here, nurse.
And Vince immediately knows, because he's like, I know that voice. Oh, man. Number 14, Shane McMahon returns after 7 years.
Is it too high? It was a hell of a pop.
Yeah, I mean, and we knew it was coming. Like, the rumor that day, like 4 or 5 hours before showtime, like, we kind of knew it was coming. But still, like, that pop. I think it's too high, honestly. I think it belongs in 20 to 25.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's top 15.
Again, you kind of look at some of the things before, it's just... Yeah, it's, yeah, I put it, yeah, the low, you know, the mid-20s or something like that.
You know, it's one of the major characters of the Attitude Era returning after a hiatus and, you know, and having completely been out of the business. So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, he'd started his own companies and done other things, so, you know, I don't think anybody ever really thought Shane was going to... It's one of those things everybody, I think, thought, we'll see him again for something at some point. But, you know, to see him come back to be involved in a storyline and a Mania match and leading to seeing him every week now, I don't think at the time we quite knew the gravity of what we were witnessing. The actual return of Shane McMahon.
And just, to come back pretty much owning his sister, just kind of like, you know, speaking down to her, and then Vince goes and holds a hand out, and he, like, just puts it down. It just, yeah, I mean, it was done perfectly, and I don't know.
Yeah, well, McMahon family conflict is always good.
Yeah.
That's always good for business. Number 13, Jeff Hardy does what I typed, apparently, on Twitter, a Swanson off the TitanTron. The Swanton Bomb. I think it's a big move. I don't think it's too high here. It's a cool moment.
I really wasn't watching the product at the time, and I think it's lost a decent amount of its impact because Jeff tried to kill himself on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's my thing about this. It's like, okay,
it's
Jeff
a cool spot.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know, like, in 2008, like, how much impact that spot had. Like, had he... I assume he hadn't done anything like that before, and it was just an incredible spot.
Shane went off the Titantron from a higher level at PNC Arena at SummerSlam.
Yeah, but that was against Steve Blackman, so it didn't count.
Okay, good point. Number 12, the day the war was won. As WWE would have you believe, when D-Generation X invades the Norfolk scope.
We had some discussion about this, of where it was going to be before the top 25 came out.
It is a top 25 moment. I will give them that.
I think it's a little low.
Really?
I'd put it top 10.
Let me look at the top 10 again. Yes, okay. I already see one thing, or a couple things I know I'd switch it up for. Yeah, I mean, I could see it in the top 10.
I mean, it was...
It's psychotic that this... It was a thing that actually happened.
I mean, I remember watching it when it happened on Raw, and just being, holy shit, this is awesome.
Yeah. The fact that it actually happened, that they just showed up and started interacting with their fans, the WCW patrons, and they were like, yeah, we got free tickets. And then they just drive up to the fucking loading dock. Like...
And they, like, panic, and they start pushing the button, and the door starts
door
to close
slowly
on
close. And then to hear the WCW talent talk about it, like, from being on the inside, being like, what the fuck is happening? Like, do we need to go out there and kick their ass? I'm like, oh, shit. I think it's more intriguing now. Then it's still a huge moment. But, like, especially, like I said, knowing the stories now of the WCW talent wanting to go out there and just throw down with them. Or even, like, invite them in and then throw down with them. Like, it's crazy. The business was in such a crazy place at that time.
Because they just let them go. I mean, the Pritchard, again, and I must recommend, like, you know, some of the podcasts are long, but I mean, Bruce Pritchard has a lot of, like, information, especially about this era on his podcast. He talks about it a decent amount if you're looking in the archives for the New Age Outlaws episode. But he talks about this particular incident because he was, like, producer during this incident. And they said they just basically let them run and do whatever they wanted to do. And it was up to the guys. And the guys were like, yeah, let's do this. And there's other things that didn't necessarily make the clip that they actually got away with, but were afraid kind of to use.
Right.
Because they didn't necessarily want to get arrested necessarily, or just get sued later on. But yeah, it was amazing watching it. It made it cool, because that was part of the fight at that time between WWF and WCW, was that WCW had the cool points for the longest time because the NWO was the shit.
Oh, yeah.
The NWO, you bought that shirt, you know, it was Hall and Nash were just, like, you know, strutting, and they were cool, and WWF was hokey. And then when DX came around, at first they were just kind of the trash heels because Shawn's an asshole and Triple H is a snob and they cheat or whatever. But when you started to get the Outlaws involved and X-Pac involved, just that newer group of DX just became the cool assholes. Like, but they were the cool guys. And this just ramped them up on the cool factor because the NWO was starting to get a little bit stale and DX became the cool shirt to have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you had the NWO shirt, like, 97, that was the cool wrestling fan shirt. 98, the DX shirt became the cool shirt to have.
What would you say is the coolest t-shirt for a wrestling fan right now?
if I were a wrestling fan right now, I would probably go, well, there's a lot of options. There's a lot of different places I could go, but I would probably go to cheatersneverpin.com.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
So hear me out on
this.
It's
our website. I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Continue.
Now we don't have t-shirts on the website. Not yet. But if you click on the Amazon.com button that's on the Cheaters Never Pin website.
I see that here.
It takes you to Amazon.com. And what you do is when you get to Amazon.com at that point, just go into that little search bar and just type in section 328. And you hit enter. And what it'll do is it'll show you a bunch of t-shirts from our friends at section 328. But there's an important shirt there now. There is a black shirt with red styling, very similar to the NWO Wolfpack design. Similar, it's not the same. It's totally different. But instead of other letters that it could have, it actually has the numerals 328, and underneath it, it says "Cheaters Never Pin."
Wow, Tom, are you saying this podcast is a t-shirt now?
I'm saying we've got hashtag merch.
Yes. Go buy our merch. I'd also like to note, if you go to, when you click the Amazon button on cheatersneverpin.com and you search, you actually don't even have to type section 328. If you just type in cheatersneverpin, it comes up as the first result.
Okay.
So, I mean, why look at all that other merch? We know what you're going to buy.
Maybe you want to buy more than one shirt. Maybe you want to buy... I don't know, a Puck and Sunshine shirt.
Ooh, or a Shut Up Tom shirt.
Yeah, no one's going to buy those.
They should.
They're just for my family.
And the best part is, after you buy our t-shirt, you add that in the cart, keep shopping whatever else you need from Amazon.com, whatever you need for your Super Bowl party, or big game party, what, I don't know. They're not listening to this. They're not
gonna... We're too late, we're sued.
Whatever, I don't give a shit. Ooh, come take our $5.
Wait, you have $5?
Right, for now, until the NFL takes it. If you...
Fuck off, Tom Brady.
You know what? If you need supplies for your WrestleMania party.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Your Rumble party, that's even closer. Because you can get those in 2 days, so, with Prime, so it doesn't even matter. Since you've used that button, we get a few cents off of it. Whether you buy our t-shirt, whether you buy other stuff. So buy it all. CheatersNeverPin.com. Click the Amazon button. Buy our merch. Search Cheaters Never Pin. Buy whatever your heart desires.
Yeah. But we'll sign those shirts for you. If you come out, if you want to segue into that one.
Yeah, just go ahead. Just keep going. Let's just get all the plugs here in the middle of the show. I love it.
Well, if you want to go to... our live podcast. We're not podcasting. Myself and JC are not podcasting. But our friends Derek and Mike will be live podcasting at Bottle Mix on Creedmoor Road in Raleigh, if you are in the Triangle area.
Yes.
Stop by
Saturday at 1.
One? Okay.
Well, maybe it's 2.
I wasn't sure.
Hold on. Show prep.
I was thinking it was 2.
I've had one in my head all week. Let's find out.
Okay, well, as JC looks for that, stop by Bottle Mix. It's a wonderful supplier of adult beverages, beer, wine if you're into that kind of thing. They have an excellent selection. They have a friendly staff that can guide you into maybe a new beverage that you haven't heard of before, but if you can tell them type of beverages that you do like, type of beers that you like, they can guide you in that way. They have wine experts where if you're looking to have that big game party or something like that, you can go and say, well, I'm having a party, this is the type of event I'm going to have, these are the types of foods I'm going to serve. They can help you in that aspect. And during this live podcast, we're going to have a few guests. We're going to have some merch there, possibly a few giveaways. I heard there are going to be koozies involved, potentially.
Yes. We'll sign it all. And it is at 1 o'clock on Saturday, January 20th.
1 o'clock. So there you go.
1 o'clock.
Mark it down on the calendar on the abacus, whatever it is that you
if
have.
If you're
there.
In the triangle and you're tired of being snowed in, come on out and drink with us. Saturday, January 20th at 1 p.m. Bottle Mix, Creedmoor Road in Raleigh. And Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my kids have not had school for the 5 days this week, so... I'm going to be drinking heavily.
Last week, I may have made a comment on this podcast that Tom and I would sit in the back and chat wrestling with whoever during the podcast. I was threatened within an inch of my life by Mike Flanagan that I should not do that.
Oh.
So we will be very attentive and participative in the podcast recording proceedings.
For the record, I was not threatened.
I was, to my face. That happened. So. Number 11. Brock Lesnar returns. This is rated too high. Because this is in the smart fan era. Everyone knew it was happening.
Yeah, he had failed his drug test or whatever, so.
Correct.
It was the area to turn to next. So, yeah, I mean, in a kayfabe standpoint, yes, it was shocking after 8 years he's back, but.
I mean, the entire crowd's chanting, "We want Brock." And then Cena's got to stand there and pretend like he's surprised. It's not a top 25. It's a top 100 moment. I don't know where you put it, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially for the reaction he got. But, meh.
Yeah.
Number 10, John Cena comes to Monday Night Raw in the 2005 draft. I mean, it's a big moment. Because that's the first time Cena had been on Raw. So bringing him to the Red Brand for the first time, to Team Red. Big moment. I don't know. I again also don't know if it's top 25.
Let alone top 10.
Yeah.
Watching it recently, it was a hell of a pop that he got. So, I mean, yeah, there's that, but I mean...
And I understand its place in his legacy and in the history of WWE, because moving him to Raw then cements him as this is the next guy, this is the next face of our company. Because Raw is the A show. So I get that that's the beginning of the legacy of Cena. But, okay, he got drafted there. Cool.
Yeah, this isn't, like, his debut on Raw or anything like that. Because technically he had been on Raw before.
I can't remember.
When he debuted initially...
That was on SmackDown. With the angle thing? That was SmackDown.
Yeah. Okay. But still, Raw and SmackDown are still the same thing. I mean, it's still... You're saying that basically he'd been working for WWF/E at the time for 3+ years.
Right.
It's not like his debut with the WWE. It's not... He's coming in from NXT or something like that. It's okay. Well, he used to wrestle on Thursday nights. Now he wrestles on Monday nights.
Yeah. Is it a top 10 moment in the history of John Cena? Yes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a place in this list, I don't think. Number 7, The Shield.
9.
Holy shit. Yeah, I skipped one. Okay, never mind. Number 9.
You skipped two, technically.
Yeah, it's true. Number 9, and this one is too low.
Yeah.
Mick Foley wins the WWF World Championship. And
That'll put asses in the seats.
Puts the nail in the Monday Night Wars coffin.
Thank you, Eric Bischoff.
Can't blame Tony Schiavone.
I'm not blaming Tony.
He was told to say it.
Tony insisted he was told to say it.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. That's the way it worked then.
Yeah.
Such a cool moment that he finally achieves his dream. And granted, to get to that point, we have to have all of the fuckery.
But that's, I mean, that's part of what makes that moment so great, is because it's the entire, like, everyone who's anyone is out there at this point for this moment.
That was the thing. You had the corporation, and the corporation was so protective of The Rock, and it just kept the belt on him for so long because they just dicked everyone over. So, for whatever reason, Mick aligns with DX, because DX hates Vince McMahon. So, that was the whole thing. You had DX taking Mick's side, and that was big to begin with. And it just balanced out the balance of power. So, you had people, you know, you had, like, Ken Shamrock tries to interfere, and Billy Gunn grabs him, and then everybody starts brawling with everyone else. And then the music cues.
The glass shatters, and the roof shatters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows what's going to happen. They're realizing at that point,
holy shit,
there's nothing that they can do. Mick's going to win the title.
So cool. So my question that's raised out of this, you talk about balancing things out. In order to get the strap off Okada, does Stone Cold need to come out and hit Ghetto with a chair?
What? What?
Or I guess he would be hitting Okada with a chair, but still. Now I want Okada and Stone Cold in the same ring, because I just think it would be hilarious.
Just picture. Son, what the hell is your name?
Kazuchika.
You're gonna make your...
Okada?
You're gonna make it rain, boy? What? You're a rainmaker? What? You mean you one of them things that I hang from my windshield? What?
Number 8. I opened a big can of worms while Stone Cold's opening a can of whoop ass there. God damn!
Whoop ass, what?
We'll stop a mud hole in this. And this Kazuchika Okada. If you're not down with Stone Cold being the next IWGP Heavyweight Champion, give me a hell yeah.
Throw me some goddamn Sapporo. Get over here. Itchy bone.
As soon as I'm done with this match, we're all going to Ribera. Goddamn. Get me some steak. What? Baked potato. What?
What?
Number 8, Trish and Lita main event Raw, and they become the first women to ever main event Monday Night Raw.
Makes number 8 because of the last couple of years.
Yep. I don't want to take anything away from them. It was a good match. But when you look at it, yeah, it absolutely ranks this highly because of where women's wrestling is today.
And I mean, it's unfortunate. Because you're talking 2004, so outside of Lita and Trish, you didn't have that much. You had Molly Holly, Victoria. I mean, you had solid workers there, but I mean, it's still not to the level that it is now.
Yeah.
But it's not a top 10. And, you know, maybe I don't necessarily see the shine of the main event Monday Night Raw. I mean, you talk about the early Monday Night Raws, like, some of the main events of Monday Night Raw were, like, Damian Demento versus Razor Ramon. It's like, it just happens to be what ends the show. But, yeah, they made a big deal out of it because it hadn't happened before. That's, women's wrestling up until that point had been kind of, you know, a buffer between bigger matches, where you kind of cooled down the crowd a little bit before the next match. That just where it was. But I mean, the two of them could put on great matches, and this was one of their better matches. And it's because of its placement on the show. It just, I don't know.
Yep.
Again, is it a top 25 moment? Potentially. I don't know. Like, 5 years ago, it wouldn't have been.
No, not at all.
But we're looking at this now. We're looking at how people like, you know, where you had all these other highlights like Charlotte and Sasha Banks doing the Hell in a Cell and doing the Iron Man matches and those type of things where we're throwing out all these firsts and then we have to roll back and go, oh, here's the first that we had back in 2004.
Yeah. Okay. We are running long. The town is like, holy shit. Number seven, the Shield implodes.
Plan B.
There's always a plan B. Stroke sledgehammer.
This was great. This was top 10, I think. Because absolutely. The Shield was so dominant at the time, and it really did come out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thought they were going to break up at that point. They'd just come off a huge win at Payback.
And it was an excuse to print money. I mean, the Shield at that time was like the Four Horsemen before yeah. that, where you didn't break up something that was just basically that perfect, it seemed.
Yeah,
it,
and they just... They had just turned babyface, what? That was in June. They just turned babyface right before Mania. So they were babyface for, what, 3-4 months?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Still, yeah. But, yeah, shocking. Number six. This is up there too high. This is absolutely a top 100 moment, but this shouldn't be on the top 10. Roman Reigns waits through minutes of booze after he defeats The Undertaker at Raw after Mania, after the last WrestleMania 33. Okay, it's a really good moment, because Roman owned that shit.
Yeah.
And but say only one line and it'd be, "This is my yard now," and drop the mic and walk away. Oh god, it was amazing. Cause it was ten minutes of booze.
And they still didn't turn him heel.
No. I don't get it.
I don't either.
Such a cool moment, but too high on the list.
Yeah.
Number five, Vince McMahon takes his first stunner.
I have to say this by law every single time I see something like this. I was there. Yes. So in Madison Square Garden. We knew it was coming. It had been built for so long because Austin was stunnering everyone. He was anti-establishment. He was anti-everything. Slaughter had gotten it. The Stooges had gotten it. Everybody had gotten
JR it. JR had already eaten one by this point, right?
Yep.
Yep.
And basically the only one left was Vince. And you knew it was coming. You just didn't know when. And just because it was the Garden and you realized, oh, this is the same Raw that Cactus Jack debuts.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Three Faces of Foley segment against Triple H was, God, this show, man. But
yeah, it's a big
Raw.
That
was the thing. It was just like, you're waiting. When he went into the ring, when he was starting to get arrested and Vince goes into the ring, the crowd was literally like, oh shit, it's going to happen.
And it did. And it kicked off the greatest feud in the history of WWF.
That's the most
the most money making feud in the history of WWF.
Yeah,
there you go. Number four, the debut of Chris Jericho. The Millennium Clock hits zero. The walls are broken down. Jericho appears. The Rock is like, "Who the fuck is this guy?"
The only negative to it, I think, was, I guess, because it was Rock. And again, going back to Pritchard real quick, Pritchard defends it by saying, well, we put him on with The Rock when The Rock was at his hottest, so that gave him the rub that showed how much faith we had in him. Jericho kind of looked like a little bit of a geek at this point, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because he still was just anybody doing anything to The Rock. But you couldn't have had it either way. Like, if you were going to put him against The Rock, you couldn't have The Rock look stupid.
Oh, no.
So The Rock still had to protect himself, so. But yeah, just the look, the everything. When the wall hits Jericho, like, because you didn't know the music. The music was out of nowhere. And you're just like, who? I mean, you knew who it kind of was coming, but, like, the music. And all of a sudden, Jericho hits the Titantron, and the crowd goes apeshit.
Yeah. Where are we? Number three. Occupy Raw. Daniel Bryan and 100 fans. Take over Monday Night Raw. Great moment. Not top 10 material. As much as I love Daniel Bryan, as much as I love this moment. Because Daniel Bryan brought me back into wrestling. But it's cool.
Yeah, it's not number three. I'd put it in top 25. Because, I mean, yeah. It's the turning point of that angle.
Recency bias puts this so high.
Yeah. But it's almost working yourself into a shoot because it's the end result that they wanted, but they're going to spin that into, well, that's how we got Daniel Bryan from being, you know, a second tier superstar to a top tier superstar. No, he was already over that at that point.
Right.
But this is more symbolic than anything.
Yep. Number two, the pipe bomb.
That's my number one.
It's not number one.
It's my number one.
Okay. Why is it your number one? We don't need to talk. Everybody knows what it is, so we don't need to discuss it. But why is it your number one?
I go back to, like, the DX thing before. It just... It broke the fourth wall. It just... It was that worked shoot that hit on so many levels that just, like... It reverberated through the fan base. It said all the things kind of that a lot of the fans were saying at the same time too, and it was enjoyable. And it just, as the smart mark that I am, I sat there and I watched that, and I'm just like, this is cool as shit.
Yeah. So it's still the best worked shoot, I think, in my opinion, in the history of wrestling.
And I eat that stuff up.
Yeah.
I mean, I will eat a work shoot just whenever somebody seems to go off script. That's when it starts to get exciting. And that's what gives people like Vince Russo hard-ons. But just that whole aspect of, like, wait a second. He's going off script. What's going... And that's part of the live aspect of it, too. I mean, that's what Vince has been selling for Raw for 25 years, is the fact that it's live. You never know what's gonna happen. Yeah. And that was believed to be one of those things where he sat there and cut, like, one of the best promos
ever.
Yeah.
Number one on their list, Stone Cold delivers a truck full of beer to the corporation and sprays it all over them
and damn near breaks the Titantron.
Yeah. Could have raised that up a little bit for that truck.
A little bit.
Cool moment. It's not number one. It's iconic. It's incredibly iconic.
Yeah. It's one of those things that people remember about that time.
Yep.
And just entertaining to me is how much Vince and Rock have to sell getting hit by beer.
Vince swimming in the beer.
Yeah.
Swimming against the current. Yeah. My number one is on this list, and it is Mick Foley winning the title.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
It's because that's what cemented Monday Night Raw as the top show.
Yeah, I mean, and it was a great moment. I mean, not just Mick winning it, because they could have gone off air with him with the belt, but Mick cutting the promo afterwards. Yeah. And just watching it just recently, him talking about, like, his little two kids at home, and you know it's Dewey and Noelle,
yeah,
that are, like, adults now, and it just makes me feel old.
And one of them is dating a clown.
That's not Dewey.
Nope. The only pin mail we got back on this was from at @inlock716 Noah's Ark. Foley winning the championship is his number one moment as well. So,
yeah, and I agree. I mean, I totally understand that. That'd probably be my two, and I could go back and forth. And it would be an easy argument for me to put that as number one, but
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe again, maybe it's recency bias. I don't know.
Yes.
So this Monday, starting at 7 on the network, because Raw's not long enough, folks. There's a one-hour pre-show for Raw 25, and then 8 o'clock Eastern Monday Night Raw kicks off on the USA Network, live from the Manhattan Center and the Barclays Center in New York, with the 300 people showing up that'll each get 10 seconds.
But Kevin Nash will not be there.
Nope, because he done had his knee replaced.
And planes are too small.
Yes, and they also, apparently, Scott Hall says they told him to bring his ring gear. So,
okay.
Yeah, stand by for that. Okay. Moving through the rest of this quickly. 4 new people joined the Performance Center this week. War Machine. So, Hanson and Rowe are now down in Orlando. Candice LeRae, wife of Johnny Gargano.
Yay.
And Prince Puma, Ricochet himself, also there. I'm excited for these four.
I believe it's Ricochet.
Ricochet. Ricochet. No, because even in Japan they would say, Ricochet! So, when he was in New Japan.
So long ago.
I know. I miss those days.
I'm excited for 2 of those 4 people.
You're excited for Candice and Puma.
I've already made my feelings heard about War Machine.
Yeah, we covered this last week, but just put them in the right position and let them meet. Just them versus the Bludgeon Brothers every night on the road. It's fine. And Heavy Machinery. What else were we gonna cover? I don't even remember.
We were gonna talk about the Rumble, which we don't have to necessarily talk about because I mean we'll have all next week's show to talk
that's
about
true.
That.
We'll talk about the Rumble next week. And most importantly next week, do you know what next week is, Tom?
What's next week, Jason?
The day that this show should come out, January 25th, 2018, is officially our 1-year anniversary.
Aww.
Yep. How crazy is that? And you know what our premiere episode was? Previewing the Royal Rumble.
We'll try to make it shorter than I'm sure it was that time.
It went 1 hour and 3 minutes.
Then
so
we may run over that for all we know.
Yeah. But yeah. So, coming up on 1 year here, thank you to everyone that listens, subscribes, downloads, everything. Has even said one nice thing to us about this podcast. Thank you. We'll be more sentimental about it next week, but I just want to say it this week too. Because we're coming around on it.
We have fun doing it, but, I mean, we just are excited at the fact that there are actual people that listen to this. And
yeah.
It kind of makes us happy that you're apparently enjoying it. You're not doing it out of spite, so.
Yeah, it's true. All right, so I guess that does it for this episode. Raw 25, the episode. So tell the people where they can find you on the internet, Tom.
Go to the Twitter machine at Mr. Workrate, at MR Workrate. There's nothing else anymore. I mean,
that's so sad.
I recently put something on. I recently put one of those shots of my backyard with the snow and everything on Instagram. So I'm trying to warm that up because I did like the top 9 thing that everybody does for Instagram. And I only actually had 8 pictures last year, so it couldn't actually fill out the top 9. I had a hole.
That happens.
So I have to. I need 8 more for this year. So I've got 1 in.
1 down, and it's only January. So you're doing good.
Yeah, 1 a month.
1 a month. There you go, baby.
That's my goal.
Did you actually have to like narrow it down at the end of the year? You had to leave 4 out.
Well, don't they like
3 out? I don't know, man.
It's like
I don't know.
The amount of like maybe likes you get or something.
I don't know. I don't do that. Anyway, you can find me on the internet at JC Bobbitt, JCBOBBITT on the everywhere. There you go. Just find me. You can find the show on Twitter at CheatersNVRPen. On Facebook, you can give us a big blue thumbs up and like us there. CheatersNeverPen.com is also there. Tom and I talked about starting a article series leading up to the Hall of Fame that I need to get started on.
where as each pick is announced for an inductee, we both give our thoughts, because that'll keep it off the show and keep these shows short, too. So we'll get that up and running this week with our thoughts on Goldberg.
Yeah, that first one's going to be interesting, because we don't necessarily agree on that one.
Yeah, I don't think we do at all, probably. So look forward to that at CheatersNeverPin.com in the coming days. And I think that's about it. Join us Saturday at Bottle Mix, 1 p.m. On Creedmoor Road in Raleigh. Come drink some beer with us. Listen to our friends talk about hockey. And then you can talk with us about wrestling before or after.
Yeah. But not during. My God, no, not during.
Because I don't like physical violence. But I do watch professional wrestling.
When it's choreographed, it's fine.
That's true. Then it's fine. All right, man. Well, I guess it does it. A year's worth of show in the books, and we start fresh next week.
Holy second shit. Year is always the, I don't know,
the sophomore slump. So prepare yourselves.
Yeah, it's only downhill from here.
All right, so for myself, I'm JC.
I'm Tom.
And we'll catch you on the flip side.